Well, hello, hello, everyone. How are we all doing out there? That was awful, Doc. What? I can't hear you. How are we doing out there? I mean, I know you're liquored up a little bit, but I think you can clap at the same time, right? How was day one at Fetch for you? Good. Excellent. We're so glad that you're here. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dr. Adam Crispin. I have the honor to chat with our wonderful colleagues on strategic advancements in wound therapy, evidence-based pathways, and you all are the very first people in person, because we're coming to you live here on a podcast at the same time, but you're the first ones to hear something very new and innovative in the veterinary industry. You guys excited to hear about it? Awesome. Well, please give us a big round of applause for our friends at NovaQuiz Health for supporting and sponsoring this great conversation. Thank you, NovaQuiz. They're in the back there. And let's get into it. We have a nice swag bag for you. This is the first time that you're gonna be getting this. So I'm gonna go over those instructions with you when you leave the door this evening, okay? For both you and for a couple of your clients. So we're excited to share that information with you. So joining us is board certified veterinary surgeon, Dr. Justin Ganji. Give him a round of applause. And veterinarian Dr. Kelly Sovey in the house. Welcome, friends. A little bit of information about our colleagues. Dr. Sovey is the owner of Davison Veterinary Integrated Care, a general companion animal practice in Michigan, incorporating both Eastern and Western medicine. She has previously held positions in equine general practice, academia, and research. Dr. Justin Ganji is a Maryland, Virginia, D.C. native. Where are our friends at? Maryland, D.C.?
Oh, yeah.
Virginia? One woo. Okay. We'll take it. Following completion of his residency, Dr. Ganji became a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Surgeons in 2017. Dr. Ganji performs a wide variety of both soft tissue and orthopedic surgery, but has special interests in minimally invasive surgery, interventional radiology, and pain management. He has a strong advocate for advancing veterinary medicine to be able to offer the most up-to-date and highest quality of surgery and medicine while minimizing pain and complications. If you're going to be joining us tomorrow for day two, he has a boatload of surgery sessions that are happening here at Fetch. And I strongly recommend that you follow his social media on Instagram, because you see incredible before and after surgery cases, which are absolutely outstanding. So fantastic. Thank you again for being here. Okay. How many of you love handling wounds? Raise your paw. How many of you go like, I don't know what to do. Raise your paw. Yeah, it's okay. No blood on the walls. We're being honest. Those of you tuning in too, do you have a hard time with wound therapy? Where do we begin? Where do we start? Comment down below in the chat, because it's interesting to see. It can be challenging.
Yeah.
And because you don't know what the heck can walk through the door at the same time. So let's kind of take a step back. And I want to show our friends in the audience, by the way, our friends at NovaQuiz were kind enough to create a nice laminated image here for the four stages of wound care. Raise it up if you have it. Let's hear it. I love it. So this is for you to take back to your practices. Dr. Ganji, talk to us a little bit, just kind of going over high level on the four stages of wound care, wound healing.
Well, yeah, this is nice, because if you've ever been to one of my lectures on wounds, I always bring this up because it's important. So it has all the four stages there of wound healing, which, you know, it may sound more academic, but it is really, really important, because, you know, it should follow kind of a nice order from hemostasis, from inflammation, proliferation and maturation. But the reason it's clinically important is because we can manipulate this with a lot of the products that we have. And being able to manipulate this and kind of get it out of certain stages and push it into more like favorable stages like proliferation and maturation can really kind of enhance our wound healing. So we'll talk a lot about kind of how some of the products we have here kind of help heal it with certain of these phases.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about vascular preservation. So as a surgeon, you've often said that vascular preservation is the single most important factor in wound resolution. When assessing a traumatic injury, what are the primary clinical signs that tell you the local environment is too compromised for that simple primary closure that we can see?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's super important. You know, without vascular preservation, it's going to fail no matter what product you throw at it. So, you know, obviously things like infection, necrotic tissue, those are things that can easily kind of compromise your vascularity. And then things like tension, we're talking about closure. And then other things too, like, you know, if they're kind of vasoconstricted, you know, depending on if they're like in shock or things like that, that all will affect your vascular flow to the wound bed. And so being able to kind of manipulate that will maximize success. So everything we got to do is got to maximize blood flow to our wound. That's how you're going to get main success.
Dr. Kelly, want to add anything to that?
No. What I go over with students, staff, as well as the pet parent. So So just kind of talking them through why we choose different modalities for the wounds that we see.
How many of you in the audience, because I'm one of them, you're closing a wound up, it looks beautiful, Picasso, chef's kiss, and then a day later, dehiscence opens up. Raise your paw if this has ever happened to you. Okay, raise your paw if it hasn't happened to you.
Oh.
Good, and you really raised your paw. I mean, this is a common thing that we have on how to close these wounds. Sometimes do we put a drain in? Do we not put a drain in? Do we suture, leave it open? There's so many different things out there. We're gonna chat a bit more about some options. Most wounds we see in practice just aren't flat.
Yeah.
You know, that they have depth and irregular margins. Why is it that traditional management, which often relies on 2D dressings, fails to address the physical volume of a deep wound? And what are the potential clinical consequences of leaving that, quote, dead space that we can see?
Well, I see from a general practitioner's point that we get contamination. They'll go outside, roll around in the yard, and come back in, and you've crammed stuff into to that lesion. Whether the owner knew it was happened under a bandage or not. So that's the biggest issue for me with dead space is making sure that we keep the wound clean and that the owners and us know what was going on with it.
Yeah, and to kind of like piggyback on that, like dead space also we know is a big predisposer for like infection and hematoma formation and pressure on the wound, all that. So minimizing it is super important.
When we have dead space, we often think to ourselves, oh, I'm going to put a drain in. Mm-hmm. So when are some indications for putting a drain in?
So, I mean, I think most, it kind of depends on the wound. I mean, if you have a wound that has a lot of, you know, like bite wounds in particular, kind of be the ones that are most infamous for creating a lot of, you know, tip of the iceberg scenario where you see a small wound with a lot of dead space. So shearing wounds, stuff like that, where you have a ton of pocketing and stuff, or if you're worried about contamination, that's when we're going to want to put those in.
Okay. And also, when sometimes we like to leave the wound open versus closed, what are some indications for leaving a wound open and not putting a dressing on it?
So if you can't close it, you know, or if it's not the right time to close it, which is, I think, super important. Rushing to close it, I'll tell people, like, you know, just rushing just to close it because we feel better not seeing an open wound is many times a mistake. You know, if it's early, you don't know what's going to happen in the wound yet. Closing it, it's just going to create a bigger wound. You're going to get rid of tissue that's going to die that you could have used. So keeping it open sometimes lets you kind of let everything declare itself and let you, again, manipulate it to get it kind of, if it's in very infected, very contaminated, kind of get it in a better state before we can close it or let it heal by second intention.
Talk to me more about that, because when there's necrotic tissue at the end, you know, usually we're taught that you kind of trim the margins that are dead and just leave it open. So you're saying you can leave some of that to help with epithelialization?
Well, you want to debride anything that's obviously dead for sure, or contaminated, but it's not always clear right away. So I think like you guys have always probably had the wound where, you know, it's a fresh wound, maybe a bite wound or something like that, and it's a little bit unclear whether or not the skin is going to die or not yet. It's not quite dead yet, but too early to call it. And sometimes it comes back, you know, it can look, it can be deceiving, you know, if it's not, you know, obviously like white, gray, you know, which is clearly dead, if it's a little bit bruised, tomorrow it could be viable and then you have that extra tissue to close, or it could be completely dead tomorrow. So sometimes you got to give it a little bit of time before you commit to like cutting it, especially in tough places like, you know, distal extremities, face, stuff like that.
And walk us through some of the flushing. So we have a fresh wound, cat bite, let's just say, that just happened. What would be your go-to when we're trying to flush the wound and take care of and triage that particular wound right away?
For like a flushing solution?
Yeah.
Really, there's actually been a lot of studies that compare, you know, sterile saline to tap water to like antiseptic included stuff. And there's no difference in actually using like tap water to sterile saline. You know, I think the fundamental thing that's important is volume over sterilization is like more important. So just adequately flushing it enough to clear it. And then also the pressure is important too. If you could actually over flush something with too much pressure, and then you're kind of non-selectively taking away healthy cells as well as dead cells. So kind of a gentle, kind of like moderate lavage with, you know, just a lot of solution is key.
Let's ask you. So you've got a fresh wound that has presented to you, just like we just said, cat bite. Raise your hand if your go-to is chlorhexidine. There's no right or wrong. We just want to see. Let's see. Right? Chlorhexidine. Anyone use regular saline? Okay. Warm water? Or from Jersey? Water? Okay. So it's interesting. It looks like the majority were saying chlorhexidine.
Yeah. And, you know, it's people do it all the time. Chlorhexidine probably isn't the best thing to use because chlorhexidine is cytotoxic to healthy cells. So in open wounds, I usually go for like a dilute betadine. It's less toxic to the healthy tissue. But you know, there is argument that you could use neither of that, and it doesn't really affect the outcome of the wound.
Okay, excellent. All right, let's talk about some of these advanced sheets that are out there. This is pretty cool. So many practitioners find advanced sheets to be expensive and wasteful because they require trimming to fit wounds, and they may still struggle to conform to those irregular beds. So how do we move beyond sheets to a 3D matrix that fills the entire defect without the waste or the common bridging effect?
For me, it's moving more towards these gels, the hydrogels with the scaffolding in it, because I can cover the wound and not have to send home sheets that the owners have to apply or try to cut themselves with bandage changes, or have them coming back multiple times in clinic, which we all see that people don't have the time, nor do they want to bring their animal who may have anxiety back over time. So moving towards some of these gels is the way I see myself moving more in management of wounds.
Dr. Genji, what is a hydrogel?
So a hydrogel is it's a product that basically allows, to simplify it, the creation of a moist wound healing environment. So it keeps the wound moist, everyone's favorite word, you know, and so it kind of keeps that hydration there, which is like super, super important for wound healing. It's the gold standard of care for wound healing. So we used to think about, you know, wet to dry, dry to dry, band. That's all gone. That's actually like frowned upon nowadays because it's not selective. Moist wound healing is the key to getting wounds to heal, and hydrogels are the staple for that because they bring moisture to the wound and they keep it there at the top of the wound surface, which allows for all of your cells to stay healthy, which secrete all these cytokines. If it's too dry, they're not going to work. They're going to die. You know, the cells need moisture to live, and so that's the purpose for this.
Has anyone had any experience with hydrogels? Raise your paw if you have. Okay, looks like about 7-8 individuals. So how many of you have not heard of hydrogels at all? Like, this is a foreign word to you, and that's okay. We just want to see where level set. Okay, so this is good. So it's newer terminology for them to understand that. So I think that's what's cool. I want to talk a little bit further about the hydrogels, because what about those deep pockets? There's some areas that are just really hard to get in there. And so they often lack residency or body to stay in place. So is there a line where a wound needs more than just hydration, where it needs a structured physical framework?
I'll let you speak to that.
Yeah, some of the deep wounds that I've seen using the hydrogels, I've been able to, with different application processes, get them into those deep wounds. With the bandaging techniques, it keeps it there. It's things closed. But I've found that I'm able to clear up some of that dead space, get it into the deeper pockets, and it also make it easy for the pet parent to be able to do that at home as well. So we can do in clinic and then send home, where they can, even though it may look scary, they can still do something that is helping fill this wound in.
Excellent. Excellent. I want to talk about something very popular. How many of you have used honey? Wow. All right. I want to hear, shout it out. What kind of honey do you use? 3, 2, 1. I heard Manuka. What else? What was it?
Regular.
Regular. Because we basic. We be basic. We use regular honey. All right. So talk to us about honey overall, Dr. Genji.
Well, I love honey. It's a really, really good product. And it's nice to see that everybody uses it because it's got tremendous amount of properties that facilitate wound healing. You know, it's antibacterial. It's analgesic. It's great. So it's really, really good. And I think it's got its uses, but there are times when it's not, really effective anymore. We know there's some studies. I mean, I think some, you know, you can get the kind of the habit of just throwing honey on everything, which, you know, again, honey's kind of my go-to for a lot of things, but, we know that there's certain wounds where it's really not going to make an effect anymore. So like when you have a wound, it's going to be like an acute traumatic wound, or even past like granulation tissue when you're kind of getting it to just epithelialize over, honey's not really going to add any more benefit at that point. It's really good for infection. It's really good for kind of getting it to dry up a little bit with that hyperosmotic. But once it's kind of just at the kind of like cruise control scenario, it's probably not doing much. So that's when we kind of look into other options.
How often should you be rechecking a wound when you're using honey?
So I think the wound kind of tells you, you know, I think for me, personally, it's all about like what stage of healing the wound is at and how effusive the wound is. So a really contaminated effusive wound, I'm going to be changing that more frequently, like with honey. Like I'll probably do it every day, sometimes like twice daily if it's a really, really nasty wound. Once it kind of starts to dry up a little bit, it's not as effusive or productive, and the tissue starts to look more healthy, I'll back it down to every several days to like probably no maximum, like usually like once a week would be like the most I would go.
Okay. But it certainly has some challenges. It can migrate or runs into high motion areas like the distal limb. Mm-hmm. So how do we move beyond honey to a modality that offers engineered positional stability?
Well, I think, you know, kind of using something that has an actual scaffold to it, which will kind of help it to kind of stay where it's at, would be beneficial. And especially if you're past the stage where honey is going to be beneficial, that's where we should be reaching for hydrogels. You know, hydrogels are going to be what's going to get the wound to heal kind of towards the end. That's all you need. But if it's just going to drip off and fall over on the normal skin, or as things start epithelializing kind of while you're using it, you know, it's going to surpass where you put it. Having something to kind of keep it on the center of that wound bed, or the open wound, is going to be really helpful.
Okay. What are your thoughts?
No, I agree with that. And I think all of us have used honey. Also know that particularly if you're using store grade, we have patients that like to eat it. And using some of the hydrogels versus honey, particularly when we get to those end stages of the healing, really helps us not look at them pulling bandages off or, you know, eating things that they shouldn't and running into potential foreign bodies.
I had a Labrador Retriever, a chocolate one, that ate everything, bandage, honey, right down to the bone. He thought it was a chicken wing. It was his antibrachium, you know. So raise your hand if you've had success with honey. Nice, that's good. And it seems to be practical. It does its job. How many of you are taking before and after photos of wounds? Raise your hand if you're doing that. Okay, awesome. Are pet owners doing it or are you doing it?
Both.
Okay, and those of you tuning in too, think about that. I challenge you because we're gonna be working towards changing the momentum a little bit on working together. Remember, pet owners are in the driver's seat. I do a practice management talk about this on how important it is to recognize and appreciate that. And we're in the passenger seat. We work together to drive these results. And we want our pet owners to be part of the process together. And so it is important that you are taking pictures and working with them to see the before and after. Because sometimes you don't even know. You see so many cases, you know, every day and every week, you forget what they look like. So. Mm-hmm. So I know your phone is loaded.
If anyone ever found it, it would be trouble.
Absolutely. Okay, so this gets us into the scaffogen. By the way, does anyone have the scaffogen drink? The Nova Quench, I believe it's called. Raise it up. Let's give a toast, everybody. Drink, because it's a sip and learn. Water, whatever it is. Throw it back. There you go. Thank you, Nova Quench. Okay, so the concept is a very unique hydrated structural scaffolding. Dr. Ganji, when you are looking at a product like scaffogen, which combines a physical scaffold into a moisture-filling gel, how does its comfortable 3D matrix change your approach to avoid compared to using a topical ointment or a flat dressing?
Yeah, I think so. Like the ointments kind of, I think these are like, a lot of them are like petroleum based. They kind of lose their benefit after a while in terms of like keeping the wound moist. And so that's where using a hydrogel really is going to be important. Now, like kind of we touched base on like, you know, if you have one that you put it on, looks great for a second, but then it kind of pours off. And, you know, after maybe like, I don't know, a couple hours, it's gone. Or drip down to the normal side of the wound, it's going to be not as beneficial. You're not treating the area you want to treat. So having a matrix to kind of keep it where it's at and provide that continuous delivery of hydration to the wound, I think is where that's important.
Excellent. And Dr. Kelly, show us the bottle. So it looks like.
So this is what it looks like. So you have an applicator tip. It can also come off too if you're applying to larger wounds as well. So it's easy for that pet parent at home to be able to apply it topically. Again, depending on wounds, because we know they're all not created equally, the top can also come off as well, where you can, you know, instruct on how to apply to a larger area.
Do they need to wear any PPE or anything?
I always instruct that because I don't know where they are. But because it's a hydrogel, there's not anything toxic per se in it. It is a water-based gel.
Okay. And we're going to go over that in a little bit. But let's take a look at some cases that we've had using this. So walk us through this, Dr. Kelly.
This was a cat that came into us, unknown origin of what triggered the wound. bond, and the owner had not known it was there for potentially several days. So after, you know, the initial wound clean and management, you know, we didn't do any type of bandaging. We sent home the scaffogen with them. We did do systemic antibiotics because, again, we didn't know the origin of this wound. But that was all the treatment. And this is over time. We did have them come back because we did want to do follow-ups with it. But after 15 days, we had pretty significant contraction and closure of that wound. And I will say the application process for the pet parent, they found it incredibly easy. They weren't having the scaffogen, you know, left on furniture or on the clothing or things like that, that, you know, some people do get upset by that. And it's obviously also too in an area on this cat that if we had tried to bandage, we may not have had good patient compliance with that one.
So this is the kitty one. And then what do we have here?
This was a canine. This had been a very, very chronic problem for this dog. And when I say chronic, I'm saying years. Antibiotics had been tried, different bandaging techniques. I think the owners were, at that point, hating the word e-collar, you know, and nothing had come to getting this wound to clear up. And when we had the scaffogen and went, you know, we've exhausted all other techniques. Let's try this. We had it actually pretty, we were all in clinic very pleased with how we had resolution of this within 13 days when this dog had this open lesion for almost 5 years.
What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Kanji?
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it had been cultured and nothing came back as being an underlying.
Well, 1 year versus 13 days is nice.
Yeah, I'm curious to see your thoughts on that. I think 13, that's impressive to see that closure on that particular type of a wound. So that's pretty cool. I like that one. And this is a horse.
Yes, this was on a horse. The forehead has. And again, kind of didn't know what had initially caused the wound, but you can see over the course of the 13 days, we actually had a pretty good contraction of that and minimal scarring. So if any of you do equine, some of them who are show horses, they don't like to see clip-cleaned areas or scars. So it was nice to see that.
I like seeing the stages of wound healing here, Dr. Ganji. What are we looking at here?
I haven't seen a horse in a very long time, but we look. You can see in the beginning, it definitely looks more inflammatory. You can kind of see it's pretty dry too, you know, and I think so. Then you can kind of see as the end, it's starting to get that pretty good epithelialization, contracting in, and then at the end, looks good.
I'm sure the audience is asking about these cases in terms of antibiotics. Were they used as well?
Yes. So if it was warranted, like with the cat, because we didn't know what was the origin of the wound, whether it was a bite wound or other type of trauma, we did do antibiotics. With the horses, like this one was a pastern, and this had actually initially been done with primary closure, but it had opened up about three times, each being closed. That's why you see the suture lines looking so big. And then it was going, we're not closing it anymore, and tried the scaffogen with it. And you can see within 18 days, we had pretty significant, you know, closure. And this was a high motion area. This is a horse that was in racing and still being trained while this treatment was being done.
It's impressive, Dr. Ganji, huh?
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, looks good. I mean, 18 days, that looks fantastic. You wouldn't even know there was a laceration that was there. And that's where is this on the horse, by the way? Because that shows you my
the pastern.
Scope of anatomy. Oh, the pastern. Pastern. And that's on the leg, right?
Yes.
Oh, look at this. This looks like something that we would see all the time in practice.
Yeah, so this was he's actually a 20-year-old a cat with pretty significant polyarthritis. The lesions on his back were self-inflicted because he gets painful and he licks. So with this one, we didn't do antibiotics, but we did do some treatments for his arthritis, because if we don't treat why he's licking, we're going to just keep dealing with the wounds. But within 3 days, I was, and so were my staff, quite impressed with the fact that all the edema that we were seeing from the initial trauma was cleared up pretty quickly. And I will say he, even though he licks, he tended to leave these areas alone once we applied the scaffogen to them.
So walk me through that then. So the cat's in your room, exam room, you're applying, you're shaving this, clipping. Did you clean this too at all?
Yep.
And then you're applying the scaffogen in the hospital.
Right.
And then you're sending some home to the owner or another
yes.
bottle?
I will say this guy lives with us, so he has an entire family of veterinarians and vet technicians that chase him down through the clinic to apply the scaffogen. But everybody knows where it lives, and with him, we were applying it twice a day. He did not get any other bandaging. And the biggest reason we did that is because he likes to really curl up under a blanket, so we just wanted to make sure it always had a nice moisture barrier to it without him initially just going and rubbing on something as soon as we applied it.
Okay. So just to reiterate then, the pet parent is then applying.
Right. The pet parent would apply this at home. And, you know, what we, you know, discuss with them and walk them through is, you know, we always talk about the PPE, just, you know, getting a good base. And we just have them rub it down their back or all over it. We're not really using different applicator things like gauze pads or things like that. We're just having them apply it directly. And he is one that if we caught him sleeping, we could just sneak up with the nozzle and drop it on him. And he wouldn't wake up because we weren't touching him.
Okay. Dr. Gandy, what do you think of this wound in terms of when we're approaching this? Because this, man, look at like the letter S I see on day one. And sometimes I'll see practitioners maybe looking to close some of these holes up or some areas to suture it, but this doesn't require that, right?
Yeah, that'd be a mistake. I mean, it looks kind of, you know, we don't really, I mean, I look at the left side and I'm like, okay, I don't really know what's going to happen here. Are we going to lose all that skin or not? So I think this is one where you'd want to kind of like take a step back before you debrided it, you know, kind of give it some time to declare itself. And it's also a hard spot to bandage. So, you know, they don't usually, cats especially, kind of bandaging over their whole body doesn't often work well. So having something where you can like not have to apply a bandage, but still have the product like stay there is kind of nice. So it looks pretty sexy on D3. I like that, you know, it's got nice granulation tissue. It looks hydrated. And you can kind of, now I think I can certainly feel more comfortable to be like, all right, I think what's dead is dead and what's alive is alive. You know, it's kind of declaring itself.
What are some indications when you're concerned about sloughing?
Just how much tissue you're going to lose, you know, and like how much, and then what you're going to have to close it with, you know,
right.
Like, so like, is it going to be in this area? Probably be able to close it primarily, but in certain areas, if you're going to lose a lot of tissue, you know, you got to start looking at like, is it going to be something where we're going to have to manage it as second intention healing? Or we need to like reconstruct this with a skin graft, skin flap, or something like that.
How many of you are comfortable using grafts, skin grafting? Okay, a couple. So that actually speaks volumes, because I mean, me as a GP, I've never, you know, done it myself, but I know we can, right? Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit about what that looks like for grafts.
Grafting is nice. I mean, it's basically, you know, the you're just creating, it's basically like, I kind of tell people like Frankensteining, basically like taking a dead piece of skin from somewhere else on them and putting it there and, you know, preparing it appropriately. And it's really, I mean, I do it all the time. I do it for distal limbs. I think that, cause the big option is right. Is like leave it by second intention or graft it. Right. And I think a lot of times it's easy just to like say, well, let's just leave it by second intention. But if the graft works and survives, which is like 80%, 85%, well, in our one study it was like 95%, then you've cut off like a dramatic amount of healing time, like weeks of probably bandaging versus second intention. You know, depending on how big the wound is, it can take a long time, you know? And so I prefer to graft it, because if it dies, then, well, you haven't really cost yourself that much time anyway. You just heal it by second intention. But if it works, then you probably shaved off like weeks of, right. of bandage changes.
Where do you get the graft from?
It depends on where the wound is. Like, you know, either the shoulder, the chest, the thigh, you know.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about negative pressure wound therapy. What is that?
Oh, it's nice. It's do you guys know what that is?
Does anyone know what that is?
You guys use it at all? The wound vac? Well, it's been around for a while now. It's basically an application of subatmospheric pressure to the wound. And it's got many, many different functions to kind of stimulate wound healing. That kind of constant physiologic pressure is a theory, is that it kind of stimulates the growth factors to come. And it's theoretically antibacterial. It's basically a foam padding. You stick in the wound, on the wound, and it's attached to a device that creates constant negative pressure, usually negative 125 millimeters mercury, and you just, it goes. And you leave it on usually for no more than 3 days. That's kind of the max. Otherwise, tissue can start to adhere into it. And then you can see dramatic differences in the wound bed after that. Granulation tissue comes faster. It's really good at whisking away like fluid that accumulates in the wound. So it's really, really, I love a good vac case.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about that. So when you're weighing the negative pressure wound therapy versus 3D structure scaffolding, or perhaps combining them, what clinical factors tell you that the wound needs that internal physical support?
Well, I would use the vac more as an initial therapy to kind of get the wound to like a healthier place. Like, I wouldn't necessarily use a hydrogel right off the bat on a wound that came in if it was not quite ready for that yet. So I'd probably, if it was questionable, if there was questionable viability or it was really contaminated, I'd probably throw the vac on. And then usually after that's off, sometimes after just 3 days, then we kind of have that healthy granulation tissue. Everything's looking better. Tissue's declared itself. And then I'd probably go throwing it on to the hydrogel at that point, potentially. They're kind of similar in the way that they're both kind of providing some degree of like stability to the wound itself in that manner.
Have you been experienced with that too?
With the negative wound? Yeah. I do not. That's why I usually reach for the hydrogel.
Yeah, no, it's good to know. Okay. All right, let's talk more towards the pet parent variable, because we know compliance and adherence is a big thing with everything that we're talking about. They get a lot of instructions, bandaging, rechecks, all those things. So, if the patient goes home to a pet parent that may struggle with complex protocols or bandage intolerance, how does that moving to a structural framework like we're talking about on day zero change the efficiency of the clinic by reducing the management complications and constant rechecks that often stem from poor at-home compliance?
We've all seen it, right? That we have these beautiful protocols to send home with a pet parent and they come back and you can't figure out what they interpreted that as, or they've come up with their own way of doing things. And we all want our patients to heal. That's our goal. The pet parent wants them to heal, but they don't see the same things we do. And they don't see the stages of wound healing. They don't see the pain factors. They don't see the anxiety factors of their patient. They just know that they have to do something, and you know, they don't see the cat for 3 days, or you know, what used to be happy snuggle time is not. So moving towards some of these modalities where I can get better compliance from the pet parent because they're not seeing it cause that anxiety at home or that discomfort. And it's an ease of application for them that if we go, hey, you can just use this as a dropper form, drop it on, versus you have to bandage in this. I see better compliance. I see, you know, the pet parent maintaining the bond that they want with their loved one, that they have good wound healing, that they're seeing what we're wanting them to accomplish, but also maintaining that, you know, their four-legged, you know, child is not afraid of them, or, you know, running at the sight of a bottle, you know, those type of things.
Right. And Dr. Ganji, as a surgeon and as a primary care veterinarian, there's a lot of communication that happens between the two of us with our patient and the client. At what point, and it depends on the type of wound, do you want to see a recheck, or do I follow up with the recheck? Like, what is a preference from the surgeon's perspective?
I think it depends. I mean, I'm kind of like sick in the head. I like to have them all kind of send me pictures like to completion, just because I'm curious about it, you know. But I think it's good to know, you know, what's going on. And sometimes they don't want to see us anymore. You know, I mean, there's definitely times where they're kind of like, you know, wounds. I always prep the people at the very first consult for a wound. I tell them, I'm like, I'm going to tell you this because you're going to get frustrated at me at some point. You're going to yell at me. They're gonna say no, but they always do. You guys have probably had it happen. At some point, they get pissed off. So I think having less time for them to come in and see you, you know, I think could have benefits, especially if they can actually do something at home rather than just be non-compliant, you know? And then if it's easier to, I think that's probably the main benefit.
Right, awesome. Okay, we're gonna take a little pause here because we're gonna go and show you what's in your swag bag. Sound good? So everybody open up your bags. I'm gonna walk you through a box reveal. Who are we? Okay, so in here, this is all for you. So this is brand new, by the way. So the product launch isn't gonna be happening until, please don't leave. I wanna go over this because this is super important. This is a new product. I need you to stay with me on this. It's very important. So this reveal is gonna be happening in May. And so you guys are the first ones to have the product there. So you open it up, there's four samples that are in here. Well, first you have a cookie, that's for you. Courtesy of our friends from Scaffogen. So that's for you, not for your patients. And then in here is a little bit of discussion of Beyond Sheets, Beyond Gels, Beyond Honey. So what we were just talking about already. And then a little bit of information on the global impact. Now, what we need from you, this is my ask for you, and I need a head nod on this, because this is important. This is how we move the profession together, my friends, and how we advance science. I need you to find and identify two patients in your clinic. Can you do that for me? That you could do when you're thinking and going through wounds, see if they make a good fit. And we need you and them to upload photos, because this is how we're going to advance the database so we can see how well the product is. We know it's going to work, but we need to add more data and more pictures to that. So there's four bottles that are in here. Correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm saying anything that's wrong. There's a pen, of course, in there. And then there's a QR code. So you can go in there and register right now if you want to register your practice in there. And then your clients, on that website, there's a section for the pet parents to upload the photos. So you can upload the first photo, day zero. They could do day three is what you would like to do.
Day three or day five.
Day three, day five, and then maybe, day seven?
Somewhere within that week.
Somewhere within that week, okay? So this is basically, we need a collaborative effort on this so that way we can see. Now, the question is, how many do they get out of the bottle?
Roughly, depending on the size of the wound, is always going to change, but we're looking at roughly about 40 applications per vial.
Okay, and is there an expiration on it?
Yes.
Okay.
I think most things do, but.
And then you like to keep it refrigerated?
I like to keep it refrigerated just because it has that cooling, sensation too. So I think it gives a little bit relief. Once it's opened, I think it should be refrigerated just because we're getting close to wounds. They're potentially touching, the tip of the vial or putting fingers in it. And we just don't want it to be contaminated and grow something. So that's where I think refrigeration comes in.
Got it. And also you should have two pet parent bags. So this is for your clients to go home with. And it's really nice because in here is a get well card. So dear Charlie, for instance, wishing you a speedy recovery. And on the back is pause 1, 2, 3, how to do it, apply, capture, and upload. Again, just that QR code that the pet parent can do, upload the photo. It'll already be up there in the cloud-based software is what it is. And that way we can track the photos and have that information captured. And there's also some finger cuts in there. So should they want to use it on their finger to apply that, they could go ahead and do that. And then there's also a little bit of vet wrap in there for you, because who doesn't want a little extra vet wrap just in case you need it? So you have that in there. So you have two clients, two pet parents. Our goal is to have at least 100 dogs and cats in there, horse.
Dogs, cats, horse.
Yep. Horses. Anybody treat horses in here? All right, so there we go. We got to add that to our database there. So that would be fantastic. So we have all those things that are in there, in addition to that laminate that you could put either on the fridge or on the back or in the treatment room. Make sure you talk about this at your hospital meeting. Me as the practice manager hat on, people don't like change. We don't even like to change our heartburn prevention sometimes. Remember Filarabits? Right? So this is a completely, different mindset, because people are skeptical about change, but we've shown that the science and the evidence is there. And so talk to your fellow doctors about it. We just don't need you as a champion. We need all of you in your practice to do that. Can I get a yes in here?
Yes.
Can I get a hell yes? All right, awesome. I love that, because this is how we advance together and grow together. And you guys are the very, very first ones in the country to be getting something like this. So this is pretty cool stuff. I love that we're sharing this information with you. Okay, so as we're wrapping up, keep looking in this stuff. What is, Dr. Gandhi, if you could change one mindset shift to, I'd say that 5 seconds fast. To veterinarians managing challenging wounds tomorrow, what would it be?
I think that it would be that there's not one way to treat a wound, and the wound kind of dictates what you do. So just be aware that there's more than just honey, you know, and more than just certain products. I think you need more than one product. I think if you just use one, you're gonna hit a wall at some point.
What about yourself?
I love all the tools in my toolkit. So I love to keep adding things that give me a better chance at you know, the success of healing these wounds. So,
and my turn, because as a general practitioner, listen, we have new monoclonal antibodies that are out there for battling the itch. Just add it to that arsenal of ditching the itch for our patients. My friends, this is another one. I've been in this field since I was a kid, many of you too. I love seeing new things and innovation happening. And I love that you talk about patient selection, wound selection, of course, but this is another great opportunity for us to add into that. By the way, those of you in podcast land that are watching this, like, how do I get one? You don't, but we will give you a website address for further information. And I know we're gonna be dropping a code there as well for you to check it out. Actually, yes, I think we are. Are we? I'm going for it. Yes. So if you use the code, if you write in and send us a DM, NovaQuis, NovaQuis, we will send not all of you, but hopefully most of you out there a swag bag of this. So that way you can have one for your practice and for your patients as well. Okay, last question. How does focusing on structural continuity and spatial integrity change the way we manage the trajectory of resolution, and what types of cases do you see the best use cases of a hydrated scaffolding product like Scaffagen?
For me, I think like it would be kind of cases that were brought up, like where it's kind of like doesn't really need to be, well, so past the initial like debridement phase, it's a healthy wound that you just need to kind of epithelialize over. And if probably also in the wounds where like you don't really need to be in a bandage anymore, you're kind of on that cusp of like, should I leave it open or not, you know? And if you don't put anything on it, it's going to dry up and defeat everything you've done. So having something that'll actually stay on there and stick while you can like kind of get them out of a bandage, I think that's a good place for it.
And Dr. Kelly, is Scaffagen a standalone product or can it be used with other modalities such as photobiomodulation? We didn't cover that. Who uses photobiomodulation? Raise your paw. About half. Yeah. Good.
I've used it with photobiomodulation, both you know, the class 4 lasers as well as the new fovea treatments. So those we do in clinic, and then you know we send home Scaffagen for the pet parent to do at home. So I've used it very successfully in conjunction with other modalities.
And after application of Scaffagen, does the wound need to be bandaged?
It depends on the wound. So some of them, yes. Others, no. I've used it both with different bandaging techniques as well as a standalone.
Okay. And just to reemphasize, how long does one application last?
It depends, too, on the stage of the wound. But we've had, I'm usually doing at least a once a day or twice a day application just to make sure that we have a nice base and coverage, but we've had one of the equine patients that it was under the bandage for 3 days.
I want to talk about the use of the veterinary technician in there. Huge shout out. Where are my vet techs at? Talk to me about that. So could the vet techs get involved on this, and what does that look like?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, honestly, how many of us are actually doing our own bandaging in clinic?
Yeah. How many of the vet techs are doing it?
Yes. No, my vet techs, you know, we go through any of the modalities and how to do it, but this is definitely a product that is very easy application for them. Also something that they feel comfortable to educating the pet parent themselves. They don't necessarily need, a doctor to step in and explain what the idea behind the application and the technique for healing is.
Yeah, do you utilize your veterinary technicians a lot for these?
I do most of them myself, again, because I'm sick. But, you know, they're definitely there helping during the process.
Yeah, big shout out to the vet techs. I learned so much from wound management from the veterinary
yes.
technicians and bandaging, of course. I put them on, they're gone.
They're gone, and they don't stay on if I do the bandaging.
So. Absolutely. And then also additional resources for clients to learn about. What resources do you recommend for them to learn about wound management and bandaging care?
I think, yeah. I mean, the CDs are great, you know, to come here and kind of there are a lot of lectures about bandaging, wound management. And I think it's good just to kind of hear different perspectives. Everybody does something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. There's probably some books. I love like for like wound management, like there's a reconstruction book that's like great for just kind of wounds and stuff like that, which is great.
I want to give a shout out to, there's a faculty speaker that we have, Brian's Bandages. Have you guys heard of him or do you follow him on social media? Brian, this one's also for you because I think what he's doing is fantastic. He's a veterinary technician and he talks about like bandaging techniques and just really innovative ways of, you know, limbs that you don't think are ways that could be bandaged. And I think it's a great opportunity for you and for your staff to learn from him too. He's on social media, he posts a lot of great stuff about that as well. And of course, last but certainly not least, we can't forget about our wonderful CSRs with, you know, forward booking, scheduling the rechecks, because this is all part of wound management when we're talking about that. Yeah. What does that look like? I'm sure as a general practitioner, when we're talking about forward booking, rechecks, or what does that look like?
You know, we, our client service representatives, particularly if we want to see a wound, you know, they talk them through, hey, when you come back for your recheck, you know, this is what you'll expect at the appointment. You know, they definitely get them on the books and, you know, let them know too that sometimes you won't need to see a full doctor appointment. You'll be here, you know, that'll be checked over. And I think it gives the pet parent a little bit of ease too that they're not going to be there another 3 hours for an appointment. That is going to be a recheck and they've already been talked through that.
So here's the million-dollar question, no pun intended, from a practice management lens. Do you envelope the price of a recheck fee? I know it varies, of course, by case, but this is the thing I hear about around the country. Do you charge for the recheck bandaging, or do you envelope that into the initial consultation? And I'm going to ask you, too. I'm going to poll the audience and see.
Yeah, but for us, it depends on how significant the initial wound was. Mm-hmm. If it's coming in to just see kind of a progress, you know, it's, you know, wrapped into the initial consultation. If it's something where we're doing more bandaging and that, you know, we do charge for, you know, technician time and supplies and that. Plus, we want to give value or at least have a perceived value of our time as well when they're coming back for those rechecks.
Yeah, and those of you tuning in, too, do you charge for a recheck bandaging fee? What does that look like? My friends in here, raise your paw. Do you charge for a recheck bandaging or a recheck visit? Yeah, I agree. I mean, the studies show that you show your value, just exactly your time, your technician time, materials, trajectory changes of what that
what
you know,
it looks
course
like,
looks like.
Right.
But setting that clear expectation and communications like, listen, mom, like this is not look, this isn't the way we were expecting it to go. And that's okay. But we have alternative routes to
take.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't stress this to you enough, my friends. I mean, this is great that we have something like this, like a care package. I don't know many companies that truly believe in the veterinary profession that want to do something, take the initiative. And I really like take pride in having a company like NovaQuiz here to be, thank you for instilling your trust in us, NovaQuiz, by the way, to really kind of set the bar for our patients. So I'm really curious to see how it works with your patients out there in the audience. Let us know how it goes. If you get stuck, contact him. No, but reach out to us, of course. We're here to help you because we got to work together to see what these before and after pictures look like. Sound good?
Yeah.
Got it? All right, awesome. Give ourselves a big round of applause. Thank you so much, Dr. Justin Ganji and Dr. Kelly Sovey. Big thank you to our friends at NovaQuiz and Scaffagen. Thank you so much. And that concludes day one. Oh, we have questions in the audience. I'm so sorry. Questions in the audience. We'll take questions. I'm so sorry. And I'm going to just repeat your question for those that are watching it. So, yes.
Like post-surgical incisions?
Yes.
And if you can apply, like closing a spay incision or, and also about a e-collar use.
On the product or?
Like if you are applying it to that cat with the bat.
Oh, can they lick it or is that the question?
Yeah. Can I put it on a spay?
Can you put it on?
Got it. Okay. So the question is, can they put it on a spay or neuter incision?
So any type of incision, yes. I've applied it to all incisions in clinic at one point. And you don't have to send home product, you know, if you're doing in clinic over an incision, but yes.
Yeah, can they use it in lieu of an e-collar? Can they lick the product?
Yes. So ideally, we don't want them to lick the product because we want it to stay in place. But because it is an aqua-based gel, it's a water-based, they can.
In the occasions that you are bandaging the wound or using like a Tefla pad, what are you using? Because obviously it will just wick it away, I imagine, otherwise.
will depend on the wound, what's going on. But yes, when we do bandage, basically we're using just a Tefla pad for application.
Hi, so I was wondering, because we talked a lot about using it in the, like on a closed incision and in the granulation phase, how can it be, is it something that can be used in the acute wound care as well, like a bite, et cetera?
So the question is can it be used in the acute phase? I think yes, because I've not had the surgical, with the grafts and things like that. So yes, in that acute phase, once we have good hemostasis, I've used it in that phase, yes.
Yes.
On your clinic dog that created his own wounds on his back and you treated it with this stuff, how did you keep him from licking the wounds after?
In the initial after application, we used a chew roux. So we spread a chew roux on the floor and let him just go through licking that while it had a chance to set in. And then, once it's in place, I found a lot of them leave it alone. It's the initial application process because they're feeling you touching them and things like that. He is not one that wears an e-collar after application, so
You slipped a comment in earlier about wet to dry bandages not being in favor anymore. What are you doing for those really exudative wounds that you need to absorb all of the yuck?
So using things like alginates I use for those, they're really good for wicking away like really, really productive wounds. Alginate is kind of, they're very, very good for that. They'll dry it up very quickly. So instead of like putting on a wet to dry where it's gonna, if it needs to be debrided, I'll debride it, and then if it's like still kind of needs a day to figure it out, I'll put an alginate on and then again, cover that with like a non-adherent dressing and change it like 24 hours later. And then usually it's pretty dry, or slap a vac on it. That would be another way to do it if you have access to a vac, negative pressure wound therapy. But if the wound effusate, like how productive a wound is, really dictates to me more important than anything a lot of what product I'm gonna use. So like I wouldn't use a hydrogel initially on a very productive, nasty wound that you're still managing. It would need more frequent bandage changes, but I would still use something that creates a moist wound environment, and that's what alginates do, but they also help to dry it up.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You were mentioning that you would put a chew down. How long does it take for the gel to actually set? It's like a matter of seconds,
it's
minutes?
It's a matter of seconds. So yes, if we're not addressing the underlying cause of, like for this individual, the arthritis, which we were using other modalities to address the arthritis, so he wouldn't be triggered by pain to want to lick. But once the application was on, because we've all had, like the cat that as soon as you touch them, they have to go take a bath because, ooh, you touched them. It's in place pretty quickly.
So I've used some other like hydrocolloid gel type of creams, gels, pastes, whatever you want to call them. And you had to minimize how much it would contact like just normal skin versus the wound. Does this one not matter?
No.
It can just smear over the entire area.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
All good. Any other? Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for joining us. Thank you for being here. Thank you again, doctors. And we hope you enjoyed day one of FETCH. We'll see you tomorrow. Sounds good. Thank you so much, everybody. And thank you for tuning in here at the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone.